The views expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of Walnut Media USA, its staff, management, or advertisers. Now, The Journey with Van Deeb.
Welcome to The Journey with me as your host, Van Deeb. You know, our mission is to inspire, motivate, and encourage you to live your best life. The guests on this show have experiences and stories that we can all benefit from. And remember, you can share all these episodes by going to kcro.com. And if you have any questions or comments for me, feel free to email me at van@kcro.com. Boy, I don't want to wait any longer to introduce you to my guest. I've got a gentleman that I've known forever, and I know all of you know who this is, Johnny the Jet Rogers. Johnny, welcome to the studio.
Well, thanks a lot, Van. Appreciate the jet move, but I used to be the jet, but now I'm just a prop plane.
Let me start over. Johnny the prop plane Rogers is in the studio.
Things have changed.
I got a feeling you could probably still out athlete just about anybody out there. I experienced it. We'll talk about that later. But Johnny, I'm just glad you're here. You know, you're so involved in our community. You do so much for other people. You're not just a all-star athlete and Heisman Trophy winner. We're going to talk about all that. But before we do, just so people know, you grew up in Omaha, didn't you?
Oh, yes. I'm from Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay. And you, what schools?
Well, I went to Lothrop Grade School. Went to a Horseman Junior High School. They call it King Science now. Yep. And then I went to North High School. And I transferred over from North and went and ended up at Tech High.
Okay. And now Tech is the Omaha Public Schools education building, I believe.
Yeah, they call it the Tech teachers. Building. Yeah, the Tech building.
Yeah. So you graduated from Tech.
Right.
Okay.
At that time, we were the second largest school in the United States and a trade school.
I did not know that. All I remember about Tech is when I was in. When we played Tech when I was in high school, we played at Tech's field, and it was the heart. That day, I don't know if it didn't rain for a year, but that day, that field, is it known for being the hardest ground?
Yeah, it's known for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one play that I got in, I could tell.
Yeah, that was our game field and our practice field, so we were used to it.
Yeah. So going back to your high school days, and you know, everybody knows that you played for Nebraska, but did you ever consider another university to play for? Did you grow up saying, I want to play for the Big Red?
No, Van. I grew up thinking that I wanted to play for USC.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I knew that if I could play for USC, that I could get to the pros. And at that time, the Nebraska really wasn't doing very well. When I was in high school, they had 2 6-4 seasons back to back, and they just weren't doing that well at all. Coach Devaney really hadn't won a championship since Jesus was a kid. It was pretty rough out there.
So. That's a long time.
It was a long time.
Wow.
So I had no intentions of actually going to Nebraska at all. Now, that was the farthest thing from my mind.
Was it Bob Devaney's salesmanship? Was it, what was the reason why you decided to stay?
Well, man, when I was 11 years old, and I remember because it was really crazy, we were super poor. And somewhere or another, I got it in my head, I wanted to make $100,000. $100,000. And so I figured if I could get to get me a pro contract, if I get to SC, I'd have an opportunity to get me $100,000. Now, my mom told me to stop telling people that because they were going to think I was crazy because black people didn't get $100,000. They didn't make $100,000. Mm-hmm. And so, she was very upset with me. She was serious that the people would think I was crazy and put me in a home. And I had no idea at that particular time what $100,000 even was.
Yep.
It was just the biggest number that I'd ever heard.
Well, back then it was a million today.
Yeah. But it was the biggest number I'd ever heard.
Yeah.
And so that's what I kept in my mind. And so I thought that if I could get to SC, yep, then I could possibly have an opportunity to get that $100,000. And so there was no way in my mind that I was thinking about Nebraska because I was trying to get away from home. I ran away from home when I was 14, man. I was getting too many beatings. I would just feel out of it, and it just kept continuing on. And so one day I decided that I was just not going to take it anymore. I couldn't fight my mother back, but she seemed like every time I looked around, I was getting beaten for something.
Oh, geez.
And I was fairly tough guy. I could whip darn near anybody. But I had a better chance of getting beat down right in my living room than I did going outside. So one day I decided that I wasn't going to take it anymore, and so I was going to run away. And I had my cousin Wilbert. Wilbert was my stepfather's nephew. He was staying with us, and I talked him into to run away with me. So I asked him where we're going to go. He said, well, he knew some people had some relatives in Detroit. And I had a grandmother in Detroit. Now, I had no idea where Detroit was or Michigan was or how we was really going to get there, but I was going to make my way out of there. So we decided we was going to leave. So one night we decided that we'd push my grandfather's old 50-something Chevy or something down the street, and we pushed it down, got it started, and we got $15 in our pocket, and we started off for Detroit.
Wow.
And we went. I was 14 years old, and he was 16 years old. And we did. We got on the road, and we did pretty good. We were getting out there, and we would stop alongside the road, and we would get other people's cars, and we would take a water hose, and we would siphon gas out of cars in order to keep the gas going on. And then after we got on our way to Chicago, we ran towards some gas tanks at a farmer. Farmers had the gas tanks in the yard and right out the farm. So we figured, like a gas station, this is great. God damn, we filled that puppy up and we blasted all, took on off. We were out there. It wasn't 20 miles, man, before the car started smoking. And it like was like crazy because we had accidentally put diesel fuel in there instead of gasoline. So we had to really ditch the car because we figured if we didn't ditch the car, then the police were going to stop us. So we would get caught. So we had to ditch the car, and we hitchhiked from one side of Chicago to Detroit. Had a couple of different rides along the way. And then we ended up in Detroit. And boy, did I have a wake-up call. Because I think in Detroit, they were having everybody, every hour on the hour, somebody was getting killed. I had risked my life and had got in more action in Detroit. And I stayed there for 3-4 months because I really wasn't coming home. Now, luckily, I did have a grandmother there, and eventually I called my grandmother there, and we talked, and I went to her house. And my grandmother back here in Omaha, which was was her daughter, my grandmother's daughter,
right.
She said if I came back home that I could come live with her, and so I wouldn't have to go home anymore. And so I did. I decided I'd come back, and I lived with my grandmother. And when I got back home, Van, I had something else waiting for me. I had my first kid at 14.
Oh, my gosh.
My first kid had just got born at 14 years old.
Wow.
And actually, my mother was 14 when she had me, and I had my first kid, Kevin, when I was 14. And so I had a heck of a deal going on as soon as I got home. Now, my only issue was when I got back to my grandmother's, she lived on the other side of town. You know, and the other side of town was the side of town where those guys didn't like me very much. They didn't know. That was on the south side of town over by Cumming Street, you know, mm-hmm. where Tech really was.
Yeah, sure,
actually, it was
sure.
on 24th Street, though, yeah. we used to live. And so they were like after me all the time. So I couldn't, I went to Horse Man, which is all the way down on the other side of North Side. Well, Van, I used to have to go to school every single morning in the dark because I was afraid that they were going to catch me outside, and I couldn't come back home until it got dark. And I did that for darn near a year. And they would come to the school, the Horse Man, trying to beat me up and stuff. And, you know, I had I'd have to sneak out the windows of the school. Wow. It was really darn rough until I actually decided to go to the Tech High School. And then I met a lot of those guys, and mm-hmm. things actually turned around. But for a long time there, I was really having problems. And I remember one day, Van, I was sitting home, and I remember I was watching a cowboy and Indian movie. And the cowboy and the Indians were chasing the cowboy. It was about six or seven Indians, and they were running him down. And they were galloping and taking off. And the cowboy took off. He was gone. He was really gone. But the Indians, they were smart. They had one of the Indians would go out, and he would sprint, and the other Indians would gallop. And then after a while, they pull him back, and they send another guy out, and he would take off after him, and then they would gallop. Well, I thought that would really, eventually they caught that cowboy and they killed him. Well, these guys all around the neighborhood, they could never, ever catch me because I was faster than light. So I didn't pay them no attention. So it wasn't a couple of days after that, me and a partner of mine came out with a couple of young ladies that we were walking home, and they surrounded me. They had me and they surrounded me, and I had a chain in my hand. I was able to beat through and get away. And I looked around, and my partner went one way, and I went the other way, and I took off down, and I was sprinting, and ain't no way in the world that they were going to catch me. I took off. I was gone. Until I looked at them, and Van, they had one of the guys that took off after me sprinting, and the rest of them started jogging. And I realized they had seen the movie. I was petrified. I couldn't believe they had seen a movie. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was through. That was the first time in my life I really knew fear because I knew they had me lined up. Well, I took off and I got seen what was happening. And I sprinted on down and I was able to dive into a car that was along in the alleyway. And I got down on the floor and they got by me and I got away. But I just couldn't believe that they had seen the movie. And then I looked back and there was no way they didn't see the movie because they only had three television channels in town.
Yeah.
Six, seven,
that's
and three.
Right. That's it. So, and it ended at 10 o'clock at
right,
night.
Right. Everybody yeah. seen the movie.
Yeah.
So those same guys end up being my teammates.
At Tech.
Yeah. These were the tough guys, wow. the bad guys, the guys that we needed to win football games. And they turned out to be some of my better friends, and we graduated together. The same guys that were at my throat earlier in life. So
isn't
it's just amazing how things change.
Turn around.
Everything changes. Nothing stays the same.
Now, was back in the back then, they had a Metro Championship. They didn't have a state football championship, I don't believe. Or did they?
I can't remember. I think we had a Metro. I think we had a state championship, but we never won state, I don't think. We won city a couple of times, but I think we lost state in my senior year. I think Guy Ingles
sure,
beat us.
Remember him?
Yep. He beat us, ran all over us in my senior year, mm-hmm. and kept us from winning that championship. But we had some of the better guys that I've ever had on our football and our yeah. basketball team. Johnny Ray was a great one, mm-hmm. That I actually played with in football and basketball and track. Ernie Britt was with us at the same time too. Big Mike Goodman.
Now, what about Marlon Briscoe? Were you how close are you guys in age?
Marlon's several years. He's several years
yeah.
older than me, and he went to South High.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And Marlon and I were friends after we went to San Diego. He and I hung out in California a bit, and I was with Marlon right up until his later years here. We played golf together. Yeah. We turned out to being pretty good friends. You know, I was really impressed with Marlon being from Omaha, being the first black quarterback to play in the NFL.
Isn't that something?
I was really impressed with a lot of guys that really were my mentors and really made a difference in my life. You know, Marlon threw me touchdowns in the park at Coons Park. I played with Gale Sayers down there in the park. Phil Wise, mm-hmm. You know, down in Coons Park, we had all the different type of football and basketball games down there every week. It was like an all-star cast down there at Coons Park. So I was very fortunate to have all these older guys that had came before me, and Bob Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Gibson, Josh Gibson, his brother, was my baseball coach.
Hmm.
He taught me everything about baseball that I knew, and I got drafted to the Dodgers right out of high school.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I got drafted to the Dodgers to play, but I was trying. They offered me $25,000 a year, but I was after $100,000.
You were after
I was at $100,000. any kind of way I can get it. I didn't care how I got it.
You just wanted it.
Yeah, but I wanted it. And when I got drafted, I went, that's when I decided I would talk to Nebraska. Nebraska's recruiting me. And I'm trying to get to SC. SC was not that big on me, to be honest.
But, so they weren't reaching out to recruit you?
SC was not reaching out to recruit me heavily.
Okay.
Nebraska was really on top of me, trying to get me. And I explained to Coach Devaney that why I was trying to get to SC, because they hadn't won games. And SC was winning, and I had to get $100,000. Mm-hmm. And so he told me that he was going to recruit more black players than any other time in history, and he was going to let them play. And if I came to Nebraska, that I would be able to make that difference, and that if I came to Nebraska, he would allow me to play football and to play baseball, and I could put those two together, and I have a better chance of getting myself $100,000.
Wow.
And so I said it would put me in. I took the deal, and it worked out that way. But the next year, I was there a year or so, almost going on my junior year, when he came to me and they told me they wanted me to give up baseball so they could put me at more time at football and get me the ball more. And I said, Coach, golly, you promised me that if I came here that I could play baseball and football. You know I'm trying to get that $100,000. He said, yeah, Johnny, I know. And if you give up baseball willingly, you will be the first guy that we've ever endorsed for the Heisman Trophy.
Ooh, there you go.
So I said,
that had to make
put me in, Coach.
Let's and we're going to talk more about that, Johnny. We're going to take a quick break here on the Journey. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Johnny the Jet Rogers. Don't stop believing. Hold on to that feeling. Streetlight
people. Don't stop believing. Hold on. Streetlight people. Don't stop believing.
And we're back with the Journey, and I'm just so honored. I've got my friend, my buddy, and a everybody knows this man, Johnny Rogers, and he's just a great human, and Omaha's proud to say that he came from Omaha, Nebraska, and we're just super proud of him. But Johnny, we were talking about, you know, your upbringing a little bit and before the break, and they wanted you to play baseball, but then Bob Devaney kind of went out on a limb and he said, I'm going to promote you for the Heisman, and you hadn't even started playing for Nebraska yet.
Well, it was my sophomore year. It was sophomore year that it came to me, so I was already a sophomore.
Okay.
So they wanted to start promoting me in my junior year.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had already played. I played freshman ball. They didn't have freshmen could not play varsity at that time. So back in my year was one of the last years that you had to play freshman ball before you went to varsity.
If they could have, would you have started on varsity your freshman year?
Yes.
Okay. I figured so.
Yeah.
I figured you would have. So what year was it that my whole family, I'll never forget this, we piled seven of us, two adults and five kids, and we drove from Omaha to Miami Beach to the Orange Bowl, and I believe it was 1971 we played LSU. Nebraska won 17-12.
Okay.
You had a kickoff return for a touchdown, which was not unusual.
That was 71.
Yep, 71.
Yeah, I had a punt return.
Punt return. And what year were you at Nebraska when that happened? Were you a junior, were you a sophomore, or senior?
I was a junior.
Okay.
That year. The next year, we played Notre Dame.
That's right.
Yeah, we played Notre Dame.
Because you won back-to-back championships, didn't you?
We won back-to-back. We might run championships against LSU in 70, and then we beat Alabama. And I ran a 72-yard punt return back that day against Alabama in the Orange Bowl. So we played all three of our years. We played in the Orange Bowl.
Yeah.
And my third year, we played Notre Dame.
Okay. Well, I remember when I was at that game at the Orange Bowl, here's one of the things that I remember. I can close my eyes and I remember seeing you running that punt back. Well, so we're all eating peanuts up in the stands. So our mouths are dry. So we're screaming when you're running. You're running a touchdown. We're going to beat LSU. And none of us could talk. We were hoarse for like three or four days afterwards. But we made the long trek. And I'll remember, I don't know if you remember any of this, but we're driving back straight through from the night of the game. We left right after the game was over as a family. And we said, we're going to drive straight through back home. We get to Nebraska, and they had one of the biggest snowstorms in the history of Nebraska. And we were stuck at the Auburn, Nebraska, their armory. We had to stay in their armory for 2 days. They had something like 14-foot drifts on the highway. And we couldn't even make it home. We ended up making it about, finally we got back on the road because they started clearing the roads. And we ended up having to carry our suitcases out of our car because we couldn't drive any farther, about three blocks. So I got lots of memories of when you played in the Orange Bowl. But well, what year was it that you won the Heisman in?
72.
72, that's right. So they just had the 50th anniversary.
Right, we played Notre Dame in the Orange Bowl in 72. And that was, Devaney was going to be his last year as well as coaching, and was my last year playing, so we wanted to make it special. So that was my first time that I played I-back for a while, and I scored four touchdowns and threw one against Notre Dame on my way out.
You used your arm.
You arms, legs, catching, running, any kind of way you could do it, we were doing it. We wanted to make a point, and we did. We went out with a bang. So we had a very illustrious career. Coach Devaney was a great coach. Coach Tom Osborne took over, one of the smartest coaches that I ever knew, and so it continued. Tom continued on and had his own dynasty after we left. But we all got it started because before that they really hadn't won too many football games. And Coach Devaney, they were trying to run him out of town when I first came there.
Yep.
And when we left, he was a hero.
I loved Lyle Bremser. Anybody that doesn't remember what his moniker, what he did, that you're the reason why he did it. Every time you'd score, every time you'd run or score a touchdown, it was man, woman, and child, he's gone. I don't think anybody can compete with that.
No, Lyle was one of the greatest announcers of all time.
And Ken Pavelka was pretty awesome, too.
Ken was good with his touchdown.
Yeah, touchdown,
but,
touchdown.
Yeah, but I really met Lyle Bremser was really the man.
Yeah,
he had people all excited. Yeah. And, you know, I get excited listening to Lyle myself.
Yeah.
About anybody darn near. You know, he really felt and really as if he was really part of the game.
I have a vinyl album of Bob Devaney, of Lyle Bremser. It's all Lyle Bremser of him recording all of his famous plays. It's really cool. It's probably worth something by now. Maybe I should sell it to you for your collection.
I think I have one. I just don't know where it is, but I'm sure I have one.
You know, something we didn't talk about before the show, I've got 100 questions. Of course, we're not going to get through probably five because there's just so much great information to talk to you about. But what's your, you know, we're talking about $100,000. What's your opinion now today of college football players being paid?
Well, I've always believed that they should be paid for play. I never really, Ernie Chambers and I always have advocated for pay for play.
Way before it happened.
Right,
I remember
all the way back in the game. Ernie and I have always advocated for pay for play. It just wasn't fair how much money was going through the game and how players were getting so little and doing so much.
And coaches making so much
off the back of the players, and the players are not making anything. So the NIL and all the different ways they can get paid, because right now they're making money off players from everywhere in the world. They're being played and being shown on radio or TV, and so there's billions and billions of dollars being made and off the performances of the players. So right. So it's ludicrous to think that for whatever, because you get a $10,000 scholarship, that other people can make billions when you are not able to help pay for your family, and you're getting $1,500 a month.
I got to tell you something. I had a big smile on my face because I really like Deion Sanders. I like his style. I like how he coaches. And he was given out an award. Maybe he just won one. It was on the ESPY Awards or something, something around the Super Bowl. Anyway, he stood up there, and I think he was just supposed to introduce the next award winner or something. This was not scripted. And he said, by the way, any of you players that want to play for Colorado, we got a lot of money waiting for you, or something like that. And it was just cracking me up. So Nebraska plays Colorado this year. What do you think about that game?
Well, it's a must-win for us. Yeah. All our games are must-wins for us. We don't care about
who the opponent is. Yeah.
Well, no, we want to whoop everybody. We in it to win it. Deion has got a great name, but he hasn't really got a great reputation particular point in time. And we have to have established. We need first two wins right out the gate coming out from Nebraska, and we have to get to a bowl game in order for our new coach to be credible.
Right. What do you think of the new coach?
I think he's credible. I think that we have a lot of good talent on our team. I think that the players, I've been down a couple different times. I've watched them. We have a lot of speed. We have a good defensive strategy going. Our quarterbacks all look good. The running backs all look great. Now it's just a matter of our coaches. If the coaches can put together the correct strategy to use the guys in the right manner at the right place at the right time, and that the players are confident in their coaching abilities at all the key positions, then we could do it. But we really have to have that, because you can have great players or great coaches.
Right.
But if you don't have them both together and they're able to work together where they believe. When Coach Osborne was coaching, when Coach Osborne called a play for me, I was confident that it was going to work. If I did what I was supposed to do, that everything else would pan out and it would work. And so I did it with as much enthusiasm as I possibly could, because it was an opportunity that he saw that we need to take advantage of. And we had practiced these things over and over again. So I knew exactly what my part was. He knew what his part was. Mm-hmm. We put those parts together, and we were successful far more times than we weren't.
Right, and that's leadership. Because without that guidance, you're not going to know that.
Well, you want that, but he has to be called. It has to be right.
Yeah.
You can't be close. You have to be right. You know, you have to be precise. Otherwise, you know, sometimes a coach might call a play and everybody say, oh, wow, not that again. That's not going to work. Mm-hmm. I see him run up the middle all the time for nothing. For absolutely nothing. I don't know how many times I can do that. Now, I can run up there because I want to fake now because I got something else coming.
Right.
But I can't keep doing the same things not working over and over again for whatever the reason might be.
Do you stay in touch with some of the guys you played football with back in your era?
Oh, yeah. Rich Glover was just here for the Jet Award.
Remember him very well.
Yeah, Willie Harper. He's in Vegas. We stay in touch. Red Baron, I talk to him every single month about something that we're actually trying to do. But one thing you learn is when you win, you stay together forever. Mm-hmm. Players that have won have a tendency to always keep in contact with each other, because we built something. We were closer than just
players. It started with your class.
Right.
The tradition of Nebraska dominance started with the Johnny Rogers era.
Well, with that team,
yes,
we have one of the best teams going, and some people say it's the best college football team of all time. Our 71 team has been voted by many as the greatest college football team of all time, and so when you win, you stay together.
Right,
you keep in contact. You have a brotherhood that's really going to last. We have something that we did that nobody else on the planet had ever really done to win to that magnitude. And when we played Oklahoma on Thanksgiving Day, when number one played number two, we had the number one defense, they had the number one offense, we were number one, they were number two, and for all the marbles, we showed the most watched football game in history at that time.
Was that game of the century?
Yeah. They stopped a war. The soldiers got to watch the game.
What was the – was that a 35-31, something like that?
Yeah, something like that, 35-31.
Yeah, and Nebraska won.
By an edge, we did. Yeah.
I don't have the best memory, so I'm glad you do.
Undefeated. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember if we lost it, I'd remember. But what surprises me a lot is that Oklahoma, they celebrate that game about as much as we do. because it was the game of the century.
They had a lot of respect for us, and they still do.
Because they were the second best team ever.
Yeah.
We were the first, but being second best team ever is still a pretty good deal. And because they played us, we helped each other be great.
So is there one, I'm sure that there's several, maybe hundreds, but is there one particular game, one particular play that stays out in your mind that I know you get, I know people come up to you because you're very approachable. You're out all the time in the city and people love you here in Omaha. I know they asked you this, but do you have one special play that you remember or game that will stand out with you forever?
Well, the one that really stands out the most in everybody's mind that's still alive was the game of the century.
Okay.
Between Oklahoma and Nebraska.
Right.
The one that stands out for me personally has to be the Notre Dame game where I scored four and threw one.
Yeah.
And I
that's
played
pretty
several,
incredible.
I played three to four different positions. And because of that, I've been voted the best all-purpose back ever, basically because of that performance at that particular time. But I did play all those positions all season long, all the time, which was hard to defense a guy who plays so many places. But, I came along at a time where we had the right coach. We had players that really were good players and played over their head sometimes. When I look back, we didn't have the biggest players or the fastest players. We just had players with heart. Mm-hmm. And they really wanted to win. And Coach Devaney knew how to really get it out of you. And I think we'd rather slide on a razor blade than to disappoint Coach Devaney.
Yeah. And that's huge in sports.
Oh, that's what
it takes.
I mean,
if you're really playing hard for your coach, you're going to give it all you got.
Well, for your coach or for your owner or for your boss or whatever
it's
it
all
is,
leadership.
Somebody has to be inspiring. If you can inspire them. They can take things to a whole nother level, and we believe that if we follow the plan, we had a good plan, and we can win, and we had to do it now.
Yeah, there's a gentleman that sat in your seat not long ago, Coach Sandy Buddha, and he was my coach at UNO, and everybody loved him, and I do believe that we won and had winning seasons because of their admiration for wanting to please him.
Right.
He cared so deeply, Coach Buddha, about his players that I believe he got that in return and people played above their skill set just to please him.
Right.
And just like you said, Johnny, it's leadership. I do motivational speaking all over and I see these companies that aren't doing well. It all goes back to leadership. If you're a football coach, if you're a business owner, if you're a parent, it's all considered leadership.
And you have to lead by example.
Bingo.
When we come by the field house at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and we see lights on up in the coach's office, they're not on. They're there.
They're dedicated.
They're there.
Yes.
They're there.
Yep. And, we're gonna talk more about that, but we're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to come back. We're going to talk about the Jet Award. So stay with us right here on The Journey. And we're back with The Journey. My name is Van Deeb, and my special guest is Johnny Rogers. Johnny, you started, an international popular award called the Jet Award. Can you tell us when you started that and what the purpose of the Jet Award and who it's for?
Well, Van, I've always said that I got God all over my life. Mm-hmm. I just am a miracle. Miracles are happening around all the time. And out of the blue, one day I just noticed, out of the blue, that the punt returners and the kickoff guys were the only guys in college football that they didn't have an award for. They had an award for the best punter. They had the award for the best guard. They had the award for the best tackle, the best center. But they didn't have the Outland Award for the best center. But they didn't have an award for the guys who are running 100-yard touchdowns. Some of the baddest men on the planet. It was just amazing that they didn't. And so I took it upon myself after I seen that didn't have it to start an award. And we started under the concept and an idea and started at Anthony's Steakhouse, where we just had was lucky to have just a few hundred people. And now this past month, we had over 1,000 people at Baxter
Can you
Arena
believe that?
For the baddest men. We call them the baddest men on the planet. Because if you can run a 100-yard touchdown, you're a bad man.
Yeah, that's right.
You're a bad man. So I'm just honored that people really respect that and that God gave me the opportunity to bring that
to
about.
Lead.
Yeah, to bring that about, to get the exposure forward, take a chance, you know, on it. Because for some reason, because it was always special teams. And generally, your special teams players, before we came along in Nebraska, you had your first team offense, your first team defense, and the guys who played kickoff and punt return and stuff like that, they were the guys who didn't get to play on first or second team.
Right.
They were all your scrappers. Mm-hmm. Well, we took that a little different.
They put top athletes.
We put our best guys on offense and our best guys on defense. We put them all together, and we call that a special team.
Right.
And those are the guys that we put out there for a punt return and kickoff, and it made all the difference in the world.
That'll make or break a game.
And wide open.
Yeah.
That's what
so
we
is
did.
Is this kind of a reunion for you with your friends coming back, people that you were friends with when you played, people you've met along the way? Is this just like a big family reunion for you?
No, not really. I do invite friends back because I have access to athletes all over the country. Mm-hmm. So I do invite some of the – just I take it from the Heisman. The Heisman – every year we have 20 or so guys that actually come back for the Heisman, and we have more of the same guys that repeat each year. So I ask some of my friends that are high, you know, like Rick Upchurch, Mike Rozier, Eric, different guys to come to ours as well for that leadership, because we can depend on them coming back. But they're not necessarily I have access to some of the best athletes in the world. And when people come to the Jet Award, they're going to see some of the baddest men on the planet. And so they've taken a liking to being able to come by that because of the highlights. Mm-hmm. When you come to the Jet Award, you see some of the best highlights, some of the best runs that you've ever seen in your entire life. Right. And they're new and different all the time. And there's guys that are actually running 100-yard touchdowns. And there are truly some of the baddest men on the planet.
You know, it's not just a get-together of the country's best athletes, the best punt returners and kick returners. It's also got a purpose. You give scholarships through this event. And is it to Metro Community College here in Omaha?
Yes, it's to Metro Community College. Metro Community College is our partner. Mm-hmm. And so whatever we raise, and we raise, you know, with three, four, and we first of all, we only started off just wanting to try to get $100,000. Mm-hmm. And we end up getting several $100,000, but they match whatever we get, they match, and we put that all together, and we've been able to have hundreds and hundreds of people be able to go to college and get a career in the trades.
Isn't that something that you started that is benefiting all these people and their families?
Well,
I know you don't look at it that way. You look at it as a charge from God that you're, you know, but and
well,
that's really cool because
value.
Because, you know, so many people, Johnny, go through their life and they have all this God-given ability and they don't use it. And I love seeing people. You know, I'm not the most talented person in the world, but I'm trying to use everything that I've got inside of me to help benefit others. And I love seeing people like you that are using your celebrity and your notoriety to benefit other people. That's
well,
huge for all of us.
I use it, Van, but the real thing is that all the people that support and participate, they're using their skills and their time and their money right along with me. They realize that anything you can do by yourself ain't big enough.
Right.
Teamwork makes your dreams work.
You don't win
Heisman trophies by yourself. You don't win national championships by yourself. And you don't put on big, great events by yourself. It's always in conjunction with others that you make your greatest accomplishments. And teamwork makes your dreams work. And Omaha, Nebraska, and the state of Nebraska has joined that team, and they're supporting the scholarship program. Of course, they get to come see great runs and great people, but they're supporting the scholarship programs because they understand the significance and opportunity for not just our youth, but for non-traditional students as well to come back and get a second chance, to get a second chance in life. When you're 25 or 30 years old, you can get a two-year degree or a 13-week CDL license. You can come back and get your second chance in life. And so now your kids have an opportunity because kids don't do what you say. They do what they see you doing.
Right.
So when you see the non-traditional students come back, then you have an opportunity to get kids to follow them. And so now we're grouping together, and with everybody supporting it, it's coming, turning into something that's bigger than life, and we're on our way to the national stage, Van.
I love that.
Our next step is national.
Yeah, so it could
be. We went statewide. This time, everybody in the state were able to watch the National Nebraska News Network show the show all over the state of Nebraska.
I would think ESPN would pick it up or someone like that.
They need to.
Yeah.
They need to.
I would think
they don't have it.
Yeah. If people, I'm sure, because people that are listening, if they want to be a part of the Jet Award next year, if they want to sponsor, if they want to be a small sponsor, a big sponsor, or just attend, there's a website they can go to, thejetaward.com. Is that it?
Thejetaward.com, the home of the baddest men on the planet.
I love that.
We'll make your knees squeeze and your liver quiver, put more glide in your stride and more dip in your hip. Y'all can't dig that mess. Y'all got the wrong address. That's the Jet Award, y'all.
I don't know how you remember. I can't remember any of that good stuff. That's hilarious. Oh, my gosh. So, Johnny, you've gotten some awards recently, some non-athletic awards. You've got with Congress. What was the – tell me about the one that
– Oh, I guess
– I was having – I had lunch with you. And we were celebrating, and I can't even think of what it was.
Well, I can't hardly either. I really don't. I have so many awards.
Recognized by the state. I think by the Senate or the Cap or the Governor.
Don Bacon.
Don was a guest on this show.
Yeah, Don put me in the Library of Congress.
That's it. That's
what I will be there for forever for community service, things that I've done. And he took it upon himself to nominate me for that, and that happened. We had a nice gathering down on 24th and Lake, and people came out. My daughter did a deal there as well, and so everything worked out great.
Mm. And Johnny, when there's I'm sure people would love to have you come speak to their company or speak at events or some of their organizations. Are you willing to do that if people would like to have you come?
Oh yeah,
speak?
We do that. We definitely come out and we motivate children. We motivate the adults. We go to the corporate. Corporate America, corporate Nebraska, have dollars, we'll travel.
And Johnny charges $100,000 and I get 10%.
You get $100,000, you can get 10%.
I tell you what, if any businesses out there or any groups or organizations that want a great speaker, Johnny would be a great person to come and talk about leadership in his football career. So there's so many things that you've done in your life. Is there anything you're thinking about that you want to accomplish the rest of your life, or are you just trying to keep what you've got, maintain, and keep making it better?
Well, I just want to do what we do well. I want to make sure that we get as many scholarships out there as possible. We've got our 100,000 mark we went to a $500,000 mark. Our next goal is to get to $1 million.
Wow.
Worth of scholarships and to have it go national. I think it's opportunities all over the country to get more people involved in the trades. And so we just have to expose that because most people don't know. If your parents are not already in the trades, you have no idea the benefits that are involved.
They can't take that away from you. That's a skill set.
It's an education.
Yeah.
Education is not really part of your life. Education is life itself. Yep. And it's an opportunity for them to get an education that they can, that doesn't take a long time, doesn't take a lot of money, mm-hmm. and you can get it, and you will have it for the rest of your entire life, and you'll be an example for your kids and your people and your family and your community. And because people don't do what you say, mm-hmm. they do what they see you doing. So we have to see more people out there, yep. because of the demand for all different type of trades that yep. are out there.
People are watching.
Everybody's watching.
Yeah.
Everybody's yep. watching all the time. But they just don't understand the value, so they got to take that extra step out there mm-hmm. to really do something.
You know, one of the things I'm real impressed with is I remember back when I was in college, they would teach us about being business people out of a book. And guys like me, my grades show it, I would drift. I wasn't good at just reading a book during class or listening to the teacher all the time. But now they're doing more. They're bringing in guest speakers that have been there and done that. And I do that a lot with Nebraska Omaha at their College of Business. And I want to tell you something. These kids today need to see and hear people that have been there and done that. And I think guys like you that are showing that, you know, that if you work hard, you persevere. Look at the tough times you had when you were 14 and when you were 11 or whatever.
Well, I mean, 11, 20,
yeah.
30, 40, yeah. 50, 60, 70, and the beat goes on. You know, I mean, we're starting off, but the thing in there, they have to realize that thoughts are not just things. Thoughts are the cause of things, and if you hold a thought long enough, you can have it. Just like I got held that $100,000. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know what the $100,000 was. Mm-hmm. When I got drafted to the Dodgers, they offered me $25,000.
Right.
I came back, and when I won the Heisman Trophy, won the Heisman, mm-hmm. and the San Diego Chargers, I got there, and they offered me $50,000.
That was going to be your pay for playing for
$50,000 a year,
which probably was pretty normal, wasn't it, or not?
Oh, it was a big deal. $50,000 yeah. was a lot of money. It's yeah. like it was twice as much as the $25,000.
Right.
So it was $50,000 was a lot of money, but it wasn't what I wanted. I had my mind set on $100,000, and I really didn't know the value of $100,000, but it was the most I ever thought of, and I wasn't going to quit until I got it. And so after San Diego turned me down, they drafted me, turned me down, I made an appointment to come up to see the Alouettes in Montreal.
Right.
And so I caught a plane up there. When I got off the plane, Sam Berger, the owner of the team, they asked me, said, what is it going to take for you to bring that Heisman Trophy and come play for the Montreal Alouettes? And I said,
$100,000.
And he said, okay.
Is that
and
right?
I got the $100,000.
Now, how long did you play there?
I played there for 4 years. And then what happened was, Van, when I was there, I heard somebody say something about a man. I said, well, what is a man? He said, well, a man, they told me a man is 10 times $100,000. I said, well, dang, what do you mean? I should have been thinking about that all the time. So I started thinking about that, and man, the next year I signed the first $1 million contract in the CFL and darn near in the NFL.
My
and started
word.
Off all the what they have now, all the salaries they got now, started then.
Well, I tell you, back then, I don't think anybody was getting paid $1 million a year.
No, that's what I'm saying. It started then.
And there was a lot of Nebraska players that followed in your footsteps going to Canada.
Well, yeah. Well,
I remember a guy that I knew well.
Fred Gommel?
John O'Leary.
O'Leary, yeah.
John went up there and played, and there were several others, I think, that went up and...
Well, from Canada had a competitive deal. It was a faster game. Mm-hmm. I mean, the NFL was 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
Yeah.
Now they got the pro and the spread, and they got a lot of passing, but now they're doing what the CFL had been doing for years mm-hmm. and years. They made it an exciting game. Mm-hmm. Exciting. CFL was far more exciting than the NFL at
that
time. Oh, yeah.
I never hear anything about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, they play on American TV all the time.
Well, I guess I'm not watching the right channels. I'm just glued to Shark Tank on CNBC.
Yes, man.
And the Dallas Cowboy Cheerleader Channel.
The cheerleaders.
Yeah, there you go.
You'd have made a great cheerleader, man.
You know what? I think I would have. Maybe I should. You know what? I probably would have played more than I played in college. So I've got the opposite here. I've got the greatest athlete of all time and the worst athlete of all time in the same room. But, Johnny, I want to thank you. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to the Journey audience that you came and spent time with us out of your busy schedule. And I just ask anybody in our audience, support Johnny and anything he's doing in the city of Omaha. We're awful lucky to have him. If you see anything that come up with the Jet Award, get your tickets. Go experience how cool it is. If there's sponsorship opportunities, it's for such a great cause. We're just super excited that you were here with us today, Johnny.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Van, and I'm glad that more people are taking part in the Jet Award. One of my biggest dreams was to have tickets that were affordable for everyone, mm-hmm. because a lot of my tickets were $1,500 for the table. We really didn't sell individual tickets. This year, we sold individual tickets for the first time. So along with our $1,500 ticket, we had a $29 ticket.
Isn't that awesome?
You know, so we had a lot more kids.
You had over 1,000 people there, right?
Yeah, we had about 1,000 people there this time because we had more people that were taking advantage of the bleacher seats and got the
That's the way to do it. People that don't care about eating, they just want to come and sit.
Well, they got with their $29, they got a hot dog and a drink.
Right on.
That was part of the deal.
I think that's super cool.
Yeah,
so. Johnny the Jet Rogers, thank you for being on the journey. And I want to thank my audience for listening. And we will see you next time. I'm your host, Van Deeb, and see you soon.
All right, Omaha. Every day's game day, y'all.
There you go, Johnny.